Lesson 9, Speak and Listen to Create Understanding. Dorothy and Charles have travelled to work together every day for the last 5 years. Charles drives their trusty old red car and Dorothy sits in the passenger seat. Every day they take the same route and towards the end of their journey they have to cross a dual carriageway and join the traffic from the opposite direction. As they approach the tricky junction, Charles looks to the left and then says to Dorothy, "Everything all right, dear?" "Yes, fine, dear," she replies, and they continue on their way. Today they follow the same routine, and as they reach the junction, Charles says, "Everything all right, dear?" And she says, "Yes, fine, dear." But as Charles pulls out to cross the road, he sees a large truck bearing down on them. Later, as Dorothy and Charles wait at the hospital, he says to her, "Every day when we get to that junction, I ask you if it's all right to cross, and you say, 'Yes, fine, dear.' Didn't you see that truck was about to hit us?" And Dorothy replies, "Every day when you ask me, 'Everything all right, dear?' I assume that you were inquiring how I was today." Did Dorothy hear what Charles said to her every day on their way to work? Yes, she did. Did she receive the meaning of his message? No, she did not. Dorothy assumed that Charles' message to her was about something totally different, her well-being first thing in the morning, rather than the safety of the road ahead. What is it that goes so wrong when we try and communicate with each other? The problem is this. When someone is speaking, their message is conveyed from the perspective of what's important to them. When someone is listening, they hear what is said from the perspective of what's important to them. Remember lesson 3, where we explored how and why people have such totally different views of the world and everything that happens to them? Unless both the speaker and the listener share the same meaning in the message, then the words may be totally lost and meaningless. So good listening is one of the most important skills you can ever develop. The key, whether you are a speaker or a listener, is to show that you understand. This will give a very clear indication that you are aware of and respectful of what's really important to the other person. Take a look at the habits of people who are good listeners and you will notice a number of tricks of the trade. So let's look at some of the things that good listeners do. Number 1, they receive the message before responding to it. Good listeners try hard to postpone making judgments, either about the speaker or about the message, until they are sure they've understood what's being said. In other words, we have to receive the message before we try and interpret it. This can be very difficult to do in practice because we have to be prepared to run the risk of having to change our minds. Number 2, good listeners work hard at listening. Did you know listening is actually hard work, both physically and mentally? 10 minutes of concentrated listening is about as much as most of us can handle in one go. Then we get distracted. So the more you can listen in chunks rather than large slabs, the more likely you will be to receive the correct message. Number 3, good listeners harness their thought speed. We can actually think much more quickly than most people speak, or even than most of us read. To avoid being distracted by other thoughts crowding into their minds, good listeners try to give full attention to what is being said, to fill their minds with the listening task. They concentrate hard on trying to identify the meaning, the ideas, and the feeling in the message. Number 4, good listeners try to empathise with the speaker. A big part of the job of understanding what the speaker is driving at involves trying to feel what the speaker is feeling, to sense how it feels to actually be the other person and to have his view of the world. What does it actually feel like to be him or her? Being empathetic may mean commenting on or reflecting back to the speaker how they may be feeling, but it can also mean matching the energy level of the other person. For example, if a speaker is angry or irrational, a calm and rational tone in your response can actually make things worse than better. If there is one quality above all others that speakers value, it is the ability to empathise, to catch their mood and respond to it appropriately. So what sort of things should we say? Whatever you say should be genuine and not just a stock phrase that you've learnt. Something like, it looks as though you're really upset by this, or I get a sense that you're feeling very angry. Or even, tell me how you're feeling right now. What is most important is that you give the other person an opportunity to acknowledge and discuss their feelings and show that you care. What not to say. The worst thing you can do is to appear to dismiss the other person's feelings or turn the spotlight back on you. I understand exactly how you feel is one of the most common phrases that people come up with when they're attempting to empathise. But you can never understand exactly how someone else is feeling. It's rather like my day today, or when something similar happened to me. Number 5, good listeners reflect what they have heard. Simply listening carefully to someone, nodding and showing attention and understanding what they're saying and feeling is not enough. Good listeners give the speaker a summary of their understanding of what has been said before they react to it. Good listeners develop the habit of saying something like, let me see if I got this right. What you're saying is, or so what you're saying is. In other words, you have to prove that you have been listening by reflecting or paraphrasing the main points of what has been said. Now here's the point. You need to demonstrate your understanding of what someone has said, the facts, and of how they feel, the underlying emotion. Number 6, good listeners give feedback to the speaker. Learning to reflect back to the speaker what you've heard is a great skill and one we all need to practice, but it can come across as very mechanical, leaving the speaker intensely frustrated. Most speakers want more than to simply have their message summarised and played back to them. They want to know what your reaction is to what they've had to say and how you have interpreted it. What the speaker longs to hear is how we feel and what we are thinking in response to their message. There's one important rule to this, though. Don't be tempted to offer judgmental or evaluative feedback. For example, don't say, you don't know what you're talking about. Or, you do seem a bit obsessive about this. Instead, the feedback should be self-descriptive. I don't think I quite understand what you're saying, or I can feel myself getting angry in response to what you're saying. Do you see, instead of attacking the speaker or appearing to, you are simply giving them feedback on what they've said. When we are truly listening to another person, we are taking in information on two levels. We are listening for the facts and we are listening for the emotions. Some people are better at listening for and acknowledging facts, and some people are better at listening for and acknowledging emotions. However, unless we listen for and acknowledge both facts and emotions, the speaker will have the impression that we're not really listening and don't really care. Penny arrives home from work, tired and hungry, to find the kitchen bin overflowing. Freddie, the baby, handed over by the nanny, is running a temperature and won't stop screaming. And on top of all this, Penny has an urgent report to finish for work in the morning. Penny's husband Ben arrives back a short while later, and Penny immediately challenges him about the bin with a raised voice. Why don't you ever take that rubbish out in time? Ben stares at the newspaper he's carrying and replies, Penny, that is wrong. I remember quite clearly taking the rubbish out last Wednesday and on the Sunday before that. Let's take a quick look at what's happening here. Instead of trying to look for the meaning in Penny's message, Ben has immediately responded to what he feels was an attack on him. He has focused solely on the facts. Does he or doesn't he take the bins out? And has ignored the underlying message from Penny, which is that she's having a tough day and that finding an overflowing bin in the kitchen is simply the last straw. The last thing that Penny needed was the voice of reason. What she most needed was support. Someone to tune into her emotional wavelength and match the intensity of her feelings. She needed some response to the drama that was facing and some recognition of her state. Almost regardless of what Ben said, he needed to respond with appropriate concern and appropriate passion. Something like, it sounds as though you've had a terrible day, Penny. Why don't I get Freddy into the bath for you? Of course, the issue of the bin may still need to be dealt with, but it isn't the immediate message. So, here's an exercise for you to try. Think of a recent conversation with another person about something that was important to them. Now, think back and analyse. What were the facts of the story, and do you think you were able to reflect or summarise those back to the person in a way that they felt listened to and understood? Now, try to analyse what feelings were expressed. This may be a little more difficult, as people often don't say what they're feeling, but we create our own interpretation from their body language, tone of voice, etc. Did you make any attempt to acknowledge how the person was feeling? Use the table in the workbook to do this exercise, and use the table again any time you have a conversation that you're having difficulty with and need to analyse the facts and feelings. The other thing that tends to happen to us when we're listening is that at the same time we have a stream of thoughts, feelings and observations and assumptions and inferences that we are making about the other person and what's going on. What most listening skills courses don't teach is how we should identify what is going on inside us while we are listening and the impact that has on the process. How do we know what someone else is feeling or what they're thinking or what their motives are? We can only know how someone else feels and what they think if they've actually told us. Otherwise, we can only assume that we know what they are thinking and feeling and make inferences from clues and signals such as body language, tone of voice, and so on. In the same way, another person can only know how we are feeling or what we are thinking if we're able to tell them. Otherwise, they will make assumptions and inferences which may well be wrong. So, here's another exercise. Think of a recent conversation that you can recall in detail. In the table in the workbook, in the left-hand column, write down the conversation as you remember it. Then, in the middle column, write down your own thoughts, feelings, and observations. Now become aware of any inferences and assumptions you may have been making about what was actually being communicated or about the other person's values or motives. Write these down in the right-hand column. For example, here's an imaginary conversation with someone called Tony. Tony says, "I think it would be much better if we didn't invite Juliet to join us for the end-of-term lunch as she's retiring anyway." My thoughts, feelings and observations might be, "He's just thinking about himself," or, "I saw him look away when he said that." And therefore, I might be assuming that Tony is motivated by self-interest, or that Tony is embarrassed. The first thing we need to do is to realise that our own thoughts and feelings can lead us to misunderstand what the other person is trying to communicate. And one important step is how you discover what is intended. The answer is to check back with the other person and test or challenge your assumptions. This is not as easy as it sounds, as there's always the possibility that you will offend the other person by suggesting thoughts, feelings and motives and values that cause offence. In the example I just gave, I might say to Tony, "You're just thinking about yourself, Tony. I saw you look away and it's obvious that you're so embarrassed, and so you should be." But a better challenge would be, "Tony, when I heard you suggest that we should not invite Juliet to the end of term lunch, I felt quite puzzled and also a little annoyed. I wondered if the reason you made that suggestion was because you felt Juliet might feel left out as we all discuss our plans for the new term. Is that correct, or am I off track there?" What's the key difference between challenge one and challenge two? Challenge one comes across more as an attack on Tony, and his reaction is likely to be to get angry and defensive, rather than to enter into conversation about the merits or not of inviting Juliet to lunch. Whereas challenge two communicates to Tony how the listener felt in response to what he said. And instead of assuming the worst possible motives and leaving Tony to deny and defend them, gives him the opportunity to discuss what he was really thinking and feeling. The next time you have a disagreement with someone, instead of trying to make them see your point of view, try and adopt an attitude of total curiosity and focus all your energy on really trying to understand why they believe what they do. Do this from a place of curiosity, I wonder what makes him think that way, rather than of superiority, I can't believe he thinks that way, is the best approach, but one that takes a great deal of caring and patience. So let's just summarise what we've learnt in this lesson. We've learnt that we can express ourselves with great clarity and still fail to communicate, that all communication is about creating understanding, that whether you are the speaker or the listener, the key is to show that you understand the other person what's important to them, and that true listening is a very courageous act because it involves seriously entertaining the ideas, values, and perceptions of the other person and putting your own ideas and instinctive responses on hold while you do that. So remember, good listening and conversation is at the heart of every successful relationship, and poor listening and conversation is the root of many relationship breakdowns and the basis of most conflicts and disputes. So why not learn to be a good listener yourself?